back to the Final Whistle podcast.
Time you run!
G'day, it's Fifey here from the Final Whistle. We've got Dale and our guest in today, which is Jacob Loco, former NRL star. For those who don't remember him or kind of know him, for the younger ones that listen, he played a fair few games for Parramatta and his career was cut short due to some off-field issues. Today, he's here. He's going to give us his side of the story, not the mainstream media side, and all the setbacks and his journey. Welcome to the Final Whistle.
Thanks, mate.
What's been happening with you?
Just working hard, training hard, playing footy out in the country. Recently taking up a bit of boxing as well.
Oh, that's nice. Good. How's isolation been treating you?
Yeah, good. Running a lot out of the gym, so.
Any extra kgs put on?
No, I mean, I've actually lost probably like 15.
Oh, well, just pure muscle.
A bit heavier, yeah.
That's all good, mate. So obviously we're here to talk about rugby league. So where did it all begin? Why did you start playing rugby league?
I started playing when I was 10 years old out in Campbelltown, for Campbelltown City. And just my friends and family were in the footy and I kind of liked it because of the aggression of it. And yeah, just went from there.
So you said that you grew up in southwest Sydney. What was it like living out there?
It was rough. It was just helicopters flying over every night because I grew up in Claymore. It was good. We played footy and stuff on the field, so on the concrete it was good.
Big family?
I've only got three siblings, but we're all pretty tight knit family. Mum's single parent and we grew up pretty rough, but it was good. We're pretty close, you know.
Yeah, so give a shout out to your first junior rugby league club that you played for.
Yeah, Campbelltown City. They were great club, great people I met there. A lot of them looked after me growing up. Valerie and David, they're actually still water runners for Campbelltown some games, but they also do Wenny, Wentworthville.
Yep.
Yeah, beautiful family. And they looked after me growing up, you know. A lot of people have, but very thankful for that too.
So growing up, rugby league professionally was always the goal at the end of the day?
Yeah, it was. It was a goal at the end. For myself, seeing a way out for me to help my mum and my siblings, you know, to stop living that struggling kind of lifestyle.
Paycheck to paycheck sort of thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so you end up at the Parramatta system from Campbelltown. How did that happen? How did you end up at Parramatta?
I got picked up when I was 15 by a coach from Cabramatta and... They kind of asked me if I wanted to play. Said the comp was good and tough and I'd get my foot in, you know, to some representative sides for the juniors and I did.
So you went through Haramats, SG Ball?
Haramats. I was in Parramatta and then SG Ball, a few games in 20s and then first grade.
So obviously going through the systems at Parramatta, who were some of the boys that made it with you?
No one really from my age group. George Tafua, we went to school together and played upper age group with him. Him and I, Parramatta didn't actually want him. Even Daniel Tupou for Roosters winger. The coach for the 20s didn't really like them. I don't know why. Idiot, eh? And then I always thought it was crazy because I think he had something against them. George ended up going to Manly and Daniel left for Roosters. And I remember the boys versed Manly in under 20s and George was killing them. And after half time... because the boys were getting chatted to and I was playing first grade, but I was still in the sheds, like just listening to whatever the talk. And the coach said, and I still reckon he can't play footy. And he was talking about George. And George had scored like two tries, set up like a few. It's so, yeah, it's crazy. He'd be silly.
It is crazy because you look at, you know, all the Parramatta, you know, players that they didn't sign and have gone on. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, you look at Yao Yee and there's like, there's like, you can rattle off 10 to 20. You just want to know what's going on behind the club there with recruitment.
Yeah, I think a lot of them have left now, but a lot of them were old school when I was there and those players were playing. And, yeah, old school mentality. If they don't like you, they won't give you a chance if you...
It sounds like in the sheds there he was talking, he was trying to back up his own...
His own
ego that, I got rid of him because he was wrong.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah.
It was his ego.
Get him to run at Georgie now.
Yeah, exactly.
So was your mentors through Parramatta, going through the systems and stuff?
My mentor was mainly... He wasn't in... the club. He was from my high school coach, my mentor, Mark Horro. His son played for Para. You know Justin Horro?
Yeah.
Yeah. So his father, he looked after us, our boys, when we were in high school playing footy, and he was a great father figure as well, you know, taught me, you know, just to love, keep loving the sport, have fun.
Yeah. You talk to Mark much today?
Not really, man. I see him out some family functions here and there, but no, he's a busy man. I think he's still coaching.
Yeah, last time I heard, he was coaching A grade at Glenmore Park. Yeah. I don't know if he's still there this year, but he was there in the last couple of years.
Mm. Justin's floating around with YKTR and all those boys.
So 2011, mate, you made your NRL debut, round 5 against Melbourne. How were you told, and what do you remember about the match, even though it was a 38-0 loss?
I think I was told a few nights before it because I was training a few times doing a pose and then I'd get thrown in by Steve Kearney. And I was playing well in the 20s and he just told me, that I was going up with him and I was excited, nervous at the same time. But they got a ticket for my mum and two sisters to come up and watch. And packed crowd too, and I could still hear my mum's voice screaming from the sideline.
Naturally, you don't forget your mum's voice.
Yeah,
yelling out from the junior leagues.
Yeah, and it was good, man. It was tough. Cameron, I was really surprised at how strong Cameron Smith was for his size. I remember running straight at him, and he just it was like a brick wall, and he just stopped me right in my tracks, man.
So they had all the big four then at the time?
Yeah, they had massive forwards, man. It was good, but a big challenge. I love getting, down nitty and gritty, but it was good.
Did Kearney, these days they make it all special, you know, with the jersey presentation and stuff, but did Kearney do anything in regards to that?
Yeah, we had a little team talk, and he handed my jersey and everything, and the boys, congratulated me and stuff, so it's good. So
Steve Kearney, obviously, at the moment is at the Warriors, and he gets a lot of flack for his coaching style.
Mm.
How did you find him as a coach? Was he down to earth, easy?
Yeah, he was good. He was very honest. He's he tried to be, fair with everyone, and whoever put in the work, that deserved to play. It was just sad to see the way he left because, how the team was going that year, in the following year. But
you think it was hard done by Prama?
Yeah, I think a few coaches, they get given the role for the Parramatta side, which they were struggling for a fair bit. And the pressure of it all, I think,
Just on coaches, and obviously it's current at the moment with Paul McGregor and Dean Pay. Do you, looking outside now, just like us, do you think it's a coaching error, or do you think it's the playing culture in the Dragons and Bulldogs at the moment?
Yeah, playing culture definitely. No, it's the coaches can do as much as they can, but if there's if the team you look at Melbourne, their culture is to win. The history and I think Parramatta it's.
They're still stuck in the 80s?
Yeah, I think so, man. I just don't know. When I was there, there was that a bit of aura about us when we'd be winning and then they'd score a try and then like we'd just let it slip at the end, you know, end up losing by 2 points or something. It's because I think that culture of mentality of already defeated, you know, when there was still time on the field to play.
So mentally more than physically.
Yeah, man, definitely.
So going from, you know, debuting 2011, obviously you suffer your first setback. First, you snapped your ACL, reconstruction.
Yep.
Tell us all about, I've had one myself, so I know what the rehab and all that, people that hasn't out there. You know, what was the setback like, you know, physically, mentally? How'd you get through that?
It was rough. I had family around me, which was I was fortunate to have, and you know, that support. But yeah, just with the training and the rehab, it was just repetitive.
Running over and over again.
Yeah, going through that pain of the physio, like just pushing, you know, trying to get your leg all the way bent and then releasing it and then bent again. Like that was everyday thing. Because they want you back on the field as quickly as possible, you know.
Yeah. So then obviously, you know, 2012 rocks around, and then in preseason, is it the same knee or your other
knee? Yeah, the same knee.
So back-to-back ACL injuries. Did you think that was it or?
When I did it that time, I was just like in shock. I hadn't known yet if I'd done it yet because I needed to do scans first. And I just remember sitting in the room, just looking at the ground, thinking like that I had to go through it all again, you know. But I don't know. It was just one of those things. If like, you know, you get thrown something, you just deal with it. Like,
It was all good. You didn't need play because you got the spoon that year. So
yeah, exactly. It's all good. It's a positive.
So 2013, you do come back from your setbacks. Talk through, especially for all the young listeners that we do have out there, talk through how you came back through your setbacks, how you mentally made sure that you were going to be mentally fit as well as physically fit to get back onto the field and not be scared of popping, snapping your ACL again.
I think the hard work got me through, you know, to build confidence in playing again, training again. I still was having problems, you know, drinking, but there was one thing I never slacked off on, and that was training. Yeah, so I think the training aspect of it got me through it mentally.
Who was the boys around you that, you know, got you through it around the club?
I can't really remember. It was just me in the
physio.
The gym, when the boys would be training on the field, it was always just me on my own, you know.
But away from the training paddock, away from the field, when you're at home, and you know you're sitting there, and you know the mental demons come in. Who was your first point of call to reach out to?
No one really, man.
Just tough it out, get through yourself.
Yeah. I'd. Those first few times, like I think alcohol was the one I turned to, you know, like that's when alcohol really started settling in, and I'd turn to that instead of, you know, facing my insecurities, you know, like, and kind of like growing from that instead of drinking.
So you obviously, you're going for your struggle, the club's going for their struggle, back-to-back wooden spoons. What was the club like when you come back from injury? What was it like? What was the playing group like?
Coming back, playing from injury, the playing group was good. We won our first game against Warriors, and this was strong, and I felt strong. I was up against Conrad Harrell, and, I was fit. Had confidence in my leg. No injuries up until, I think, 3 or 4 games in. I had niggling injuries. And then it just kept getting worse and worse,
So, at the end of, obviously, 2014, you were signed with the Bulldogs from 2015 and beyond. And at the time, Terry Lamb had quoted that you had the same physical traits and dimensions as a young Sonny Bill. It was a great rap from the Canterbury legend. Were you aware of these comments at the time?
No, I wasn't aware of the comments. I don't look, you know, into media a lot or what people say online, kind of thing, because it, yeah, it can really get in your head, you know, if you do all that. But Terry Lamb, he's an awesome guy. Very friendly around the club. When I was training around the gym, and yeah, it was good.
So, the Parramatta didn't want to re-sign you, or the Dogs just offered you more money. What was that all about there?
I was what's it called? With Parramatta, I failed to train. Sorry, a session, or properly. Well, because I had been drinking the whole night before, and I come to training, and yeah, my trainer smelt alcohol on me. Oh, yeah, he smelt alcohol on me, and it was just him and I. And he's a good bloke. He's we had a talk, and he knew I was struggling a bit, and told me to have a chat with Brad Arthur. If, you know, to be honest, like, in moving forward, and so I did. I had a chat with Brad Arthur about that night. I had a drink and rocked up to training, you know, intoxicated still, and it was already my, like, 50th, you know, chance. It was I had so many, man, and
got the tap on the shoulder then?
Yeah, I had a chat with Daniel, the old coach. What's Daniel from 2009? The
Daniel. Where at Bulldogs?
The grand final, Parramatta. Who was the coach then?
Daniel Anderson.
Yeah, Daniel Anderson. He was he was doing something around for the club. I think he was like a general manager or something. I had a chat with him, and yeah, we. So that from there, I knew it was, you know, kind of going for me, and like and then my manager ended up getting in contact with Bulldogs. I had a meeting with them. They tested me out. I went through a health testing and kind of thing, like, and they got me to run on a treadie, and I was still coming back from a patella tendon tear. And that got infected, and that was a big one. I had a Rico on my patella, and it got infected, and I was in, yeah, agony. couldn't breathe couldn't breathe properly. Every time I'd cough, it was like I was getting electrocuted. It was bad, and went back to the hospital, did some tests, and I was in there for another three, four months with 4 or 5 more surgeries on cleaning it out. So that was a big one. They told me I couldn't run properly after that or play football, the specialists, and I ended up coming back from that, you know, and just from the training, just from the, like, hard training and all that. And Bulldogs gave me an opportunity, and just kept pushing from there, but still I had my demons around that time.
Yeah, so we move forward to 2015. You were arrested for, you know, high range drink driving with blood alcohol level almost 4 times the legal limit. Mm. Fact or fiction? And, you know, what's your side of the story compared to the media?
Oh, man. I was 4 times over the limit. Just drinking the day before. And I don't know how I got behind the wheel. Hey, and, yeah, just choices, man. It comes down to, you know, big demons. Yeah.
Yeah. So you took.
How are you now? Like, with the alcohol, do you drinking now, or you've been?
Yeah,
sober?
I still have my moments now. Still trying to work on them. It's tough, but yeah, every time I pick up a bottle, it goes down south very, very badly, but I'll have, you know, moments of, you know, like a good time of being sober and training hard and doing all that stuff. But yeah, I feel good now, like confident that I'm, you know, on this path, like to for a better life, you know, just regardless of me training or not. Yeah, pretty much.
So did you end up playing New South Wales Cup for Dogs all that all of 2015?
Yeah, played for them Dogs, and I was close to getting a shot, and I got in trouble again. Got in to that fight with George. I think you guys got a question here. Yeah.
Well, that, was that the same night as at the Star City? You got caught with some pills and stuff?
Oh, no, that was a different night, man. That was after the pill thing was after that one, and that was pretty much the last straw as well.
So you got into a punch on with George.
Yeah, we got into a tussle outside a club, and yeah, just alcohol once again, man.
Another demon there. So are you and George so sweet now? So
yeah, whenever I see him, like, you know, we chat and whatever. But yeah, it's just shit out of the way it ended. You know, like ended up, you know, the fight and yeah, just me and alcohol, man. It's not a good mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you never feel like, you know, the media's out for you?
Well, the media is the media, you know. They'll be out for any story. It's understandable, man. And
especially with NRL and its players. They love to feed off that.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything negative, like, it sells, you know. So it was no one's fault but mine, getting in that situation. You know,
it's great taking that ownership and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, obviously when you got sacked from the Bulldogs, you know, 22 years of age, no NRL contract. Do you think that was it, or?
Yeah, pretty much I was over it, man. I had completely went off the rails after leaving the Dogs. I continued drinking. It was a very rough 2 years from there, I think. Just drinking and alcohol and drugs and shit, and bad benders.
Did you you know, see some of the players these days check themselves into some facilities and stuff and get some help? Have you know, reached out and tackled the demons in that way?
Yeah, well, when I was at Dogs, I was talking to they had me talking to someone, but I think no matter, like, you know, what help you get, if you're not, it doesn't matter what anybody tells you if you're not going to help yourself. So, but
you obviously end up playing out at Fillmore Roosters.
That's when life kind of got back on track, and, you know, happiness kind of come back to me, playing for Thelmy.
Did you go there before or after your Blacktown Workers contract?
Before Blacktown Workers. So I was at Thelmy, one of my mates, Jake Mullaney, I played with at Para, he reached out to me and asked me if I was keen to play after, I think it was a year and a half, 2 years I had off, and I just jumped in, and just the people around there, you know.
That country style living.
Yeah, country style living. I'm working out there as well. So, yeah, just the people there, you know, beautiful people. We have functions for the team. You know, everyone comes together like a family. It's beautiful, man.
Away from the bright lights, obviously, of the NRL. No, it's not a business type thing. It's more of a family knit out there.
Yeah, more of a family, close, you know, close family type kind of vibes, and it's beautiful. David Green and Christy Green, that he's also my boss, but he has a lot of work he does around the club, and beautiful family. Very fortunate, you know, to meet people like that very, you know, helpful and in everything.
Is Tim Green out there still?
Tim Grant.
No, Tim Grant's playing down in the Illawarra competition.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we had him on earlier in the year. And
yeah.
So 2017, you signed with Blacktown Workers Eagles, you know, for the you know, for the Fed Club for Manly.
Yeah.
There's reports saying that you didn't want to play because you might have to play with Georgie, you know, and you quit to play for your quit to play with your mates and then start an apprenticeship. What's the truth there?
Oh,
media.
That's not true. I was playing for the Manly side, but I don't know. I wasn't looking after my weight, to be honest. I was struggling with back problems and just my knees. You know, I packed on a few kilos during that season and was finding it hard to train during the week and back up during the games. But only recently I've just but in that George thing, that's not true, man. Like,
just the media trying to use an angle there to sell papers.
Yeah, I don't know. That was the reason why I kind of just like left again. I wasn't looking after myself. I think dietary wise, went back to the country footy.
Speaking about the media, just came out I think yesterday, Aaron Mullen, about the Polynesian boys and pronouncing names and stuff. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw a meme on it.
Adam Fanua Blake has come hard. What's your take on it?
Oh, I don't care. Like, fuck. You know,
it's Loco's easy to pronounce anyway. Yeah.
Oh, but
I struggle with some of the Polynesian names. And
make it known on the pod when we're doing the team list on Wednesday. He struggles, but look, I get just on that there. I get the Black Lives Matters, and again, all lives matter. You don't want to see people dying when it's not their time.
Yeah,
but if they're going after Aaron Mullen, shouldn't they go after Billy Birmingham too? I remember a skit he did on pronouncing the New Zealand's names. Many years ago, and he's made a living out of, you know, Pakistani names into cricket and whatever else. So, you know, if they want to go after Aaron, they better go after the 12th man as well. But getting back to you, mate, what's the toughest player that you've had to play with and against? We spoke about Cameron Smith earlier, about a brick wall, and his size not matching that. Is there anyone else that comes to mind that you go, shit, he was hard?
Who was it? I don't know, really, man.
Who was the player that you didn't want to run at an opposed session to trainer?
Everyone.
Biggest pest on and off the field. Who's the biggest chirper around the playing group and then also when you're playing against them?
Probably Corey Norman. he's a funny dude.
Yeah.
Did you out on the field? Did you guys get much like time to sledge against one another? Like if there was a scrum break or that?
Oh yeah, you'd have a chat or like laugh and tease or whatever, you know.
You got any like Willie Mason wore the or well the
yeah thing the mic thing. Like,
that was hilarious. But with no crowds being out there at the moment, you can. I remember Curtis Scott was it last week? It was up against his former side, the Melbourne mate. The chirp at the whole 80 minutes. You get sick of it. Yeah. Obviously, you know, you were tipped, you know, to be the next, you know, the big thing when you debuted in Parramatta. What advice would you give to, you know, all these 18, 19-year-olds, you know, getting that million-dollar contract that, you know, picked to be the next big thing? What's some advice, you'd give them, you know, going into the NRL?
Going into the NRL? Life's life, man. You know, you get thrown... certain things and you deal with it, you get given certain friends and it's up to you, you know, if you want to keep hanging out or choosing. It's just it comes down to a choice. Do you want to sacrifice, you know, like those times or keep working and getting better, not just only for sport but as a person, you know. I was real young and naive, I think. Didn't really have anyone to look up to, kind of. Just now I think I'm hitting around a corner. I've learnt from, you know, a fair bit, but life's good.
That's good, man. So you're coached by three coaches at Parramatta?
Stuart, Brad Arthur and Stephen Kearney.
Yeah. So all of them are three different, you know, unique characters. What did you learn differently from, you know, each one of them?
Brad Arthur, man, he was awesome. He used to run with us when we do the fitness, and he used to run with me and push me. And I just, from what I got from him, was, I think, mental toughness. He's awesome, man. Brad Arthur, he's really good. And Ricky Stewart, I think team camaraderie was a big thing with him.
We can see that down in Canberra at the
moment.
Yeah,
just get, you know, making sure, like, you know, the player you play with is, you got his back, like you're going out to war. He taught me how to, yeah, look after your own kind of thing. And Stephen Kearney taught me to be honest, you know, be true to myself kind of thing. And yeah, it's been good.
So how's our life off the field, as you know, now? You're working?
Yeah, working now.
What are you doing?
Civil plumbing. Oh, yeah. And a bit of operating here and there. And, I do a bit of art, actually. So my boss, he's got me in the big big shed office, painting stuff. These new stuff he bought, and just repainting them, and I've been in there for a few months. So
Picasso.
obviously you got yourself a lovely partner who's supported you.
Yeah, she's a very strong lady.
How long has she been on the, you know, been with you through the whole ride? Or
we've been together for two years now, but she's seen a bit of demons as well.
She know who you were as the Loco, as the NRL player, or she just didn't know anything about footy in general?
Nah, she didn't know anything. Yeah.
Met Loco the person.
Yeah.
any regrets, man? So throughout your career?
Nah, hell no.
Just own it.
Yeah, bro. Like, man, I wouldn't have met, you know, the people that I have in my life today, and I wouldn't have had the mindset that I have right now about life. So just going through all that stuff has taught me, you know, that you can pull yourself out of any situation, no matter how bad it is. You know, there's always a way to make yourself a better person, work hard still and train hard still, and just have quality time with your family and still be loved by the people that you love, you know.
And that's great values to have.
Yeah.
If you were the head of NRL today, what would you do? What would you implement in terms of education around young players and the alcohol and their social welfare and whatnot? You know, we've seen in isolation, Addo Carr and Latrell Mitchell doing their cultural things up at Tyree.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that if they didn't post it to social media. Mm. So what would you do if you were in charge of organising a program for the young fellas to make sure that they don't fall into those traps?
I think a big part of it has to do with growing up, finding out backgrounds of each player. Would help out a lot.
Building that
where
rapport.
They grew up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Build a rapport, find out their lifestyle, you know, because mostly the players that do make it, they come from, you know, rough upbringings. But when they get thrown a lot of money, you know, you don't know what to do with it. You just spend it on stuff to feel good, you know, like that you never had before. So it can be tough. They need to be taught how to spend their money. I think they need to be taught how to sell and buy properties. That's a big thing, because after they, you know, footy ends abruptly, they have that to fall back onto, you know.
And we see a lot, you know, players come in and players go out.
Mm.
And I don't think the NRL care too much for the players that have gone, because they know that there's another one coming around the corner.
Yeah, because that's what
a business to them, mate.
Yeah, that's what I've learned, man. Players need to remember, at the end of the day, like they think, I love this club. This club's been so good to me. I'm going to play for the rest of my life. Blah blah blah. Here and there, and and they're only good to you when you're not injured or you haven't stuffed up, you know, or
had a bad form.
Yeah, and then yeah, you just at the end of the day, man, it's all about you. How you set up your future, your family, you gotta you gotta just do what's best for you, pretty much. You know that saying.
Well, that's what a lot of players do that these days. You look at, you know, they're taking it as a business. Like, you know, some club's going to give you 600, someone's going to give you 800.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
or someone's going to give you 1.2 just to muck around in the number 6 or a 7.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
It's very difficult. Do you still, you know, tune into games and stuff or anything like that? Still watch the games?
Yeah, man. So my sister, her partner is Penny Terapo.
Oh, yeah.
And they
Karen,
have...
nice.
They have 4 beautiful children. Yeah, so I whenever I get a chance, I always watch him. And plus, I go for Parrot too. So
at the moment, mate, I think there was four. The last time they were 4 straight was 83, 86, and 89. And two of those 3, they won a premiership. So it's looking good. The porch light might be turned off for Parramatta since 86.
Maybe.
So just getting back, yeah, obviously, you know, the NRL. Players and wiping away. Do you think, because obviously there's a lot of time between training sessions, do you think the NRL is too far gone in terms of professionalism to go back to some sort of 70s and 80s setup where they were working and then training and then, because to me, and this is just an outsider as a fan, but obviously knowing a little bit about the inside of how a club works, to me, it just seems like they've got too much time on their hand, and there's not a lot of things to fill the void in between, you know, training and then the next day.
They have, so they do have things for you to do. They have those classes. You can take up a profession as well. Like, they help out with that you can do in your own time during those mid sessions and whatnot, but. Yeah, the training sessions, they're rough, man. The hardest sessions I've ever done in my life are, you know, the NRL training. It's so demanding on your body, and any time you get to rest it's more of a treat in itself. But yeah, it's very tough, man. I know what you mean, as well. How do you
find now working and then training and then playing on the weekend? How does that, you know, does it harness the body, or do you feel better for it?
Yeah, it does harness the body. I do feel better, but I also work really hard on stretching and, you know, at the end of the day and doing cold showers and mornings. Yeah, my body's used to it now as well. And surprisingly, my knees are good. You know, I've been looking after my knees really well. I've had 8 knee recos all up on them. But I've been running 8-6 kilometers a night as well.
So with those knees being very good, and you only being 27 years of age, is there a chance to see Jacob in the NRL again, or maybe even head over to the Super League? Because the Super League, you know, that could be a great avenue if the NRL don't want you and you want to go and travel.
I don't know, man. I think my thing that I want to do now is mainly just train insane, just for my well-being, you know. It helps me, and I love boxing as well, so...
WWBC logo, champion,
I want to, that's the goal, I think, right now. Try to get
a professional
fight. Yeah, get into boxing for now.
Take on Paul Gallen?
Nah. just amateur fights for now, man. Go from there, you know.
Awesome, man. All right, that's it from us, guys. We'd just like to, thank, you know, Jacob for his time. You know, it's been, you know, an awesome journey, and, you know, thanks for giving us the privilege for, you know, understanding, you know, everything that went on behind the scenes and the facts and the figures, but also, you know, the demons you went through. We're very grateful here at the Final Whistle, and
thanks,
I wish you all the best, bro.
Yeah, it's good to see you come out on the other side, mate, and make a bit of a, you know, a life away from the spotlight.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, boys.
And that's the Final Whistle. Yeah.